order. This is the first meeting of the Budget Committee for the budget season of fiscal 2019 through 21. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilor Akins? Councilor Graham?
Here.
Councilor Jensen?
Here.
Councilor Rosenthal?
Here.
Councilor Seffinger?
Present.
Councilor Slattery?
Present.
Moran?
Here.
Hyatt?
Here.
Runkle?
Here.
Hunter?
Here.
Lucas? Sorry.
Here.
Bachman?
Here.
Morris?
Here.
Stromberg here. I'm going to move public forum up ahead of nominations for budget chair. We have one person who wants to speak. Does anyone else want to speak in public forum tonight? Okay, I'm going to give each speaker 3 minutes and then close the applications to speak for public forum. Hewels, will you come up? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. You also got you in passion. What are we talking about tonight? What are dollars and carbons and the climate change, if there's anything that's possible to be done, there actually is. It's going to be a long time. Kilowatt-hours, dollars, and carbons, we can measure those things. Well, here, look at this group. This measures the dollars. Who is measuring the kilowatt-hours? That's a budget department. Who is measuring the carbons? So the best way to say it is kilowatt-hours, dollars, and carbons. But what is the most important? Maybe you know climate change, it should be carbons, kilowatt-hours, and dollars. Or, in this case, carbons, dollars, and kilowatt-hours. All energy can be put into kilowatt-hours. For instance, a gallon of gas is how many kilowatt-hours? 32. And these electric cars can go 4 miles on 1 kilowatt-hour. Pretty good. And natural gas is 20 kilowatt-hours of cubic foot or something. So what's most important? Kilowatt-hours, carbons, dollars? Carbons, or in this room tonight, it'd be dollars, carbons, and kilowatt-hours. So those are the three things that need to be measured. And you put them all together, and it reveals everything about what we should do. I like kilowatt-hours. Energy is kind of fundamental. And dollars next year, that's kind of really fundamental. And then the carbons are last, but maybe the carbons should be first. Anyway, kilowatt-hours, dollars, and carbons.
Thank you. Thank you. Mark, are we printing out the rules?
Yes.
We are. Okay. So, members of the Budget Committee, we're printing out at the moment the rules of the Budget Committee that were created by the Ad Hoc Committee, and we're going to pass them out. So now I would like to open the floor for nominations for the Budget Committee Chair. Steve?
I nominate Paul Hyatt.
Second.
All in favor, show of hands. Wow. Paul, you've got a career. Let's swap.
Take your nameplate. Two nameplates.
Thank you.
committee. Next on the agenda would be nominations for a vice chair.
Okay. I would like to nominate Shane Hunter for vice chair.
Second.
All in favor? All right. Shane would be the vice chair. So the public hearing was put up front, so we don't have any further public hearing. That's item number two. So moving past that, we move on to item three, which is the budget and the budget message, which we will turn over to Mark Welch.
Members of the committee, Mark Welch, Administrative Services Director. Just first want to thank everybody for your participation in this budget committee process. You know, it takes a lot of will to apply to be on a member of the budget committee, to volunteer your time and undertake this very important task. And once we get through the meeting tonight, you'll see that the task that we're undertaking is very different than we have in past budget cycles. So I just want to first thank everybody for their time and your commitment to ensuring a better action. So tonight, we're going to break the meeting into kind of three sections, hopefully. We'll start with the traditional budget message, preview major assumptions in terms of expenditures and revenue. Then we'll go into the how we balance the general fund, and then we'll talk about new budget. I'm proposing, if it's okay with everybody, that we kind of hold questions for the end of each of those sections, just so we kind of have a flow and can get through each section timely. So with that, you know, I've been struggling for a while on how to start this meeting. I really have. And, you know, for the last 13 years that I've done budgets, I've always gotten up, and it's the same phrase that I think every finance director, city manager uses every time they present a budget to any type of council or board is, you know, it's an honor to present the budget. And we use that phrase, and everyone uses that phrase. And, you know, with what's included in this budget, I didn't think that was the proper term. So I came up with a little bit slight variation. So, you know, with a very deep heart and many months of sleepless nights, we're presenting to you the biennium 2019-2021 proposed budget tonight. So we started the budget with some major concerns. You know, for the last 2 years, through the budget committee, council action, and discussion, we knew we had major concerns that were looming. We knew this budget was one that was going to have to tackle some very hard areas to address. And then we got hit with some smoke events, which also added to some of our concerns. So, you know, city of Ashland, very tourist-based economy. A lot of our revenue in the general fund comes from tourism. And we're not growing. So we're a tourist economy, and we don't have growth in our property tax as our neighbor to the north, Medford, does. They're growing. They have new commercial development. They have new residential development. Whereas our property tax or assessed valuation, and we'll talk about it, we're forecasting a 4% growth in our assessed valuation, which is 3.5% statutory and a little bit of growth in new construction. You know, our neighbors to the north, they're growing. They have that assessed valuation maybe is growing 5, 6, 7% because of that new construction piece. So we're a non-growing tourist economy with concerns on that tourism side. We are also concerned with the cost of personnel. Through the last budget cycle in 2017-19, we knew the cost of our people was not sustainable. We had models showing that the cost of everything from our full-time employee salaries to healthcare and PERS. We knew the cost was something we needed to address, and you know, over the last 2 years we've addressed some of it, and this budget proposes additional changes. We also, in the last budget, we adopted a budget with a general fund deficit of $1.25 million in the general fund. On top of that, we used one-time money from the CIP, the facilities fund, to balance our essential service. That was done to maintain service, to ensure our staff, no cuts in the staffing levels, to maintain our service, and to make sure that hit of $850,000 wasn't absorbed by the general fund, which would have led to cuts in the general fund. So we came into the budget knowing we had a lot of concerns, and I hope over the last 18 months or so of our discussions, people are aware of those concerns and understand where they're all coming from. So to start this talk, touching on the tourism economy, we've experienced those smoke events. We, through a tedious process of identifying funding sources for additional police officers, we raised the transient occupancy tax from 9% to 10%, 11% increase in that tax rate, with the hope that of the 30% unrestricted TOT revenue, we would be able to fund a police officer. That didn't materialize. And we kind of, probably not saying it the best way, but we just got lucky that we were able to put in that increase to stabilize the rest of the general fund for this year. We're forecasting 9.5% growth in TOT, in total collections. When you normalize that for that rate increase, we're forecasting a negative 2.5% TOT collections. And we'll talk a little bit more on how we came up with that number. We also have seen impacts on our food and beverage tax. The revenue's been down. We're starting to see it stabilize, and we think it's going to increase slightly. The difference between TOT and food and beverage is TOT is used for the general fund operations. Food and beverage is for wastewater debt and future capital projects. So if it does not come in, we can adjust long-term plans accordingly.
And parks.
And parks. So moving on to expenses, the budget that's proposed in front of you has no new positions. There were requests from several departments for additional positions, and the direction is that none were included in this budget. So there are no added increases. The enterprise funds had forecasted increases in their master plans, and Public Works Director said, you know, it's not right for everyone else to take cuts, and that's not. So no new positions, no matter the funding source for them. We'll talk about the general fund balancing proposal a little bit later, but in that proposal, we're eliminating 6 full-time positions. The recommendation that we're bringing forward tonight is that we cannot maintain those 6 positions and keep the general fund balanced. We can't balance the general fund with those positions. And in addition to those 6, there were 2 positions in the 17-19 budget that are unfilled currently, and those are, once again, not budgeted in 19-21. So a total of 8 positions have been eliminated. That doesn't mean that the cost of people and our personnel services didn't increase. We still see increases in personnel services for the biennium. We're showing a 25% increase. We break that down as about 12% per year. I have a hard time with biennium viewing things in 2 years blocks because it makes the numbers look a lot bigger and the percentage changes look a lot bigger. So that's a 12% growth in personnel per year. That's comprised of 7% roughly in salary and wages, which includes regular employees, COLAs, step increases, overtime, the cost of new labor contracts, and so forth. The big increase in fringe benefits is obviously PERS. So the PERS rates went up 25%. So in year one, you'll see a 25% increase in what we're contributing towards PERS. That doesn't increase per year. It's a biennium rate. So in year two, is about 3% increase. And our healthcare costs have gone up. And we'll look at those in a second. So one of the biggest costs for the city is people. 65% of the general fund is personnel costs. And we have some projected cost of living adjustments built into this budget that's presented. Outside of the non-represented group, which is forecasted at 2% COLA, the other COLAs are collectively bargained. So those are under union contracts currently. And you can see they range from 3% employees to 2% from those with IDW electrical, 3%. I thought it was important to break down that salary and wages. It's not all regular employees. It's not costs of people aren't going up. It's not salary for full-time employees. So when we break down our category, which we call regular employees, you can see a growth of 8.63% for the biennium, or 4% per year. So that includes the COLAs as well as step increases. HERS is one of the big challenges. It's not a challenge that we face alone. It's a challenge that we face with every government agency in Oregon, and actually probably most government agencies across the country. And I just thought it was important to break down for everyone's knowledge that the PERS rate that we're charged is not only attributed to that the current position's retirement benefit. So there's a normal cost, and that's the cost of current employees' pensions. And you can see that ranges from a low of 7.21% for officers to a high of 19.49%. So just under 20% for Tier 1 and 2 police and fire. That's the cost of our current employees' pensions. There's also an unfunded liability. The unfunded liability, unfunded actuarial liability, is the cost of past employees and some current employees who we didn't collect enough for. So when the actuarial does their analysis, they look at what do we need to pay for our current benefit offerings to current and past employees, and they come up with a UAL rate. And that's 11.81%. So about half in some cases, or equal to, or more than the cost of current employees' pension benefits. And I thought it was just really important to break that out and show it. And one of the things we did, we implemented a new budgeting software. We used OpenGov to do our budget and our personnel costing, which gave us more capabilities to do some analysis that we didn't used to have the abilities to do. And so we wanted to look at, you know, what is the cost of the city's paying in terms of the normal cost for current employees plus that unfunded liability. And the results were kind of shocking. We found that in this budget, we're actually paying more in our unfunded liability payments to PERS than we are in our normal cost. And we break PERS out into dollars amounts. You can see that citywide, our contribution to PERS has increased $2.1 million, or 26% for the biennium. Another big change that we see in the proposed budget is a change in our health insurance. So during the last, July 1st of 2018, we left being self-funded. We saw the cost of that going way up to a point where we were looking at 40% premium increases that weren't budgeted. And so we made a decision at that time, City Council made a decision to leave our self-funded plan and join a fully insured plan, which was with CIS. At the time of that decision, the analysis was showing that over 18 months, that's the 18 months was what CIS guaranteed us in terms of premium locks. It was estimated that we would avoid $1.5 million of cost. Since that time, we've gotten more data from CIS in terms of what our plan is costing them. And for the first 6 months of that plan, if we stayed self-funded, we would have had a $900,000 increase over what we were paying. So going to CIS for the first six months, we've avoided $900,000 in cost. That plan ends, so the grandfather plan, the plan we're currently on, which CIS took our plan as is, so the current benefits, the benefits we provided to employees under self-funded plan were maintained under CIS for 18 months, so they were grandfathered into their plan. That ends in January of 2020. In January of 2020, the city will have to leave that grandfather plan and select one of CIS's general offerings. Those general offerings have changes in benefits, and one of the big changes is it's gonna shift the cost of employees' benefits to the employee. So they're forecasting that our rates will go up slightly, 6% growth in our rates. But what that doesn't tell you is employees are gonna take a lot of the hit in terms of the benefits that they are receiving through the plan. One of the positives of leaving self-funded was we kept in place a 10% forecasted growth in premiums for the last year of the biennium, so the year we're currently in. CIS kept our rates at FY18 levels. We forecasted 10% growth for FY19. CIS came in at 18 levels. We kept the 10% growth in place since it was budgeted to help build a reserve in our health benefits fund. And the whole purpose of that reserve fund in health benefits was to mitigate future rate increases. We knew healthcare, just like everybody, healthcare is going to keep going up. The national average, I believe, is 4.5% to 6% a year, maybe 7, 8. And so we thought it was prudent to keep that in place, build a reserve in our health benefit fund to mitigate future rate increases. In this budget, you'll see a forecasted growth of 6% for all non-police and fire, so police and fire's grandfathered until January of 2022. We're forecasting 6% growth for all non-police and fire and 10% growth for the police and fire employees, since their plan is a little bit richer and a little bit more expensive to offer. When we look at that in terms of dollars, we had about a $1.9 million increase in our health benefits in the current budget. So that ends just real high-level assumptions in regards to personnel. Now moving on to materials and services. Materials and services are items that departments need in order to carry out their jobs. There's a lot of supplies that the fire department needs to buy to run the ambulance service. There's chemicals and water and wastewater that are needing to be purchased. And the directions of departments were come in with no increases. Anything that you control, come in at zero or come in below where you currently are. And when we collect all the data and we remove out internal charges and insurance, we're down almost 1.6% in materials and services. Materials and services, including those items, were up 5%. The reason I take out those items from this discussion, departments do not control some of the items in their materials and services. Those are essential service charges, so charges for their impact to essential service. And we'll talk about that in a second. We redid our equipment replacement charges to make sure that we could maintain and buy equipment as they are needed to be replaced. Those are kind of double charged in our budget, so they show up as department expenses. For example, the general fund, there's essential service charge in fire department for payroll. Then we pay for it out of essential service as an employee expense. So they're kind of double counted. So took those out. So once again, like I said, we are up 5% in the materials and service line item citywide, taking out the materials and or the internal service charges along with insurance charges. We're down 1.5 or 1.6%. Over the last year, we completed a new cost allocation plan. The last cost allocation plan for our essential service charges was done in 2010. There's been a lot of changes in federal law since that time. One being that you have to comply with a federal statute 2 CFR 200, which puts requirements on how you do your cost allocation plan. So since we did not have a federally legal document, we weren't able to charge any grants, essential service charges or overhead. In this budget, we are fully implementing the new cost allocation plan. We're phasing it in over 6 years, but the basis for the charges is based on the new plan. And you can see that essential services, which we had a negative $800,000, $850,000 yearly, $1.7 million deficit in the last budget, we are balanced. So essential service has a sustainable model in place. And those charges went up citywide $3 million. We also looked at our equipment replacement plan and said, you know, we need to update that. We need to make sure we're capturing the life cycle of those plans. Look at the actual usage of those vehicles. Look at the maintenance records. Don't make decisions strictly based on years of service, but make it based on the maintenance of those vehicles and replace them only when they're needed. And we also said we need to update the cost of vehicles. Vehicles have gotten more expensive. And so we've increased charges to departments of $623,000, so a little over $300,000 a year. And that's all built into the budget. Moving on to capital. Capital projects are necessary to maintain our city's infrastructure. We have a lot of master plans, and the council just recently adopted a capital improvement plan. And the important part about having these plans is when you address these projects early, so when we look at streets, if you're able to address a street early, that's actually going to be the lowest cost to our ratepayers and taxpayers. Because the longer you wait to maintain your infrastructure, the more expensive it gets. And so the CIP that was adopted by the City Council is fully adopted and implemented in this budget. And you can see citywide, we're down 17% I promised everybody I would not make a big to-do about this, because this isn't something we're proud about. This is something that we knew we had an error in our budgeting methodology and philosophy last cycle in terms of our water treatment plant. The $57 million is a realistic number. That's what we expect to get completed in this biennium. That $69 million was not ever a realistic number. So it's down, but what you're seeing is a realistic number of what we expect to complete. And we do have the CIP, which was adopted. It's on the web. I have some links in the budget document to direct you to it. And it's also in the proposed budget that you have. The city does have debt, and we are continuing to meet all the debt obligations. And you can see we haven't taken on much debt in the recent years, so you're seeing payoff and the cost of that, of the current debt that we do have. Moving on to revenue, I touched on property taxes a little bit earlier. We are proposing no change in the property tax levy rate, so it maintains at the 4.2422 that was adopted in the last budget, as well as the two GEO bonds for Fire Station 1 and Fire Station 2. We're forecasting a 4% growth in the assessed valuation. We've met that over the last couple of years, and we're also projecting that we maintain that 95% collection rate. And last year, we collected just about 95%. So although, you know, in the last cycle, we called it an aggressive estimate, we think it's actually a more realistic estimate and feel comfortable with that in this budget. We touched on TOT. Once again, we increased the rates. We are projecting a 2.5% decrease, a real decrease in TOT. So taking out that 11% rate increase, we're projecting 2.5% decrease. And how we did that was we broke down our analysis by quarters. So we didn't look at it at an aggregate level and try and forecast what we think is going to happen. But we said, you know, let's look at our TOT quarterly and see the performance over the last couple of years. And what that data showed was in quarter two and three, so the shoulder seasons, as they're referred to, we're actually seeing increases in those. And so we're projecting 4% increases in the shoulder season revenue, 2% growth in the run-up to the summer season, and then 0% growth in the summer months. So 45% of our revenue in TOT comes from quarter one, and we're projecting a 0% growth in that quarter. Another major revenue source is franchise fees in the general fund. We charge franchise fees for utilities impact on the city. They range from 10% on electric to 2% for Ashland Home Net. We're projecting a 4% overall increase in the franchise line item. That's comprised of different categories. Different utilities are performing differently. Telecommunications is down. People aren't buying as much TV. Services, so you can see some decreases. Wastewater revenue collection is down. That's due to the way we calculate wastewater fees is based on your summer water usage and winter water usage. And the winter water usage was down. And so going forward, we're projecting a decrease in the wastewater revenue. And you can see that reflected here in terms of the franchise fees. The city charges customers for the use of services. Both in terms of utilities for your usage of those, as well as parks, recreation programs, ambulance transports, building fees. And so that category is actually one of the largest for the city. It's $131 million for the biennium. And so in utilities, we're projecting a few increases. So the budget, as presented, includes a 3.65% increase in electric, mostly due to the increase in BPA fees. Water wastewater at 4%, and that's following the master plans and the rate schedules that we have in place. And streets and stormwater, 3% increases. I thought it was important to show kind of where the money comes from. So you can see the city does have a large balance, carry forward fund balance. So that's money that we've collected in the past years that we're carrying forward. It's a resource in the current biennium budget. That's $43 million is what we're projecting ending our fiscal year balance at. $48 million comes from taxes, so about 12% of the overall city budget. And you can see charges for services is up 7%, so $131 million from charges for services. The city budget, if we look at the resource side, is increased 4% from the last budget. The biennium budget as presented is $301,187,702. But when we look at where the money goes, so we look on the expenditure side, we can actually see a decrease in our budget of 13%. So when we look at the resources, we're up 4% to $301 million. But if we look at the requirements, we're down 13%. And that's largely due to capital projects. And so with that, I'd be happy to answer questions on budget message.
Yes,
Mark, I want to say that's by far the best budget message presentation I've seen since I've been mayor.
Shane, did you have a question?
Yes. Where the money comes from? The carry forward fund balance, is that, that's not what you expect to use? That's like a piggy bank?
It's a combination. So a lot of that comes in terms of the water. So the water fund, and pretty excited we put in the budget book, a long-term financial plan, so looking at the water fund. The water fund is building up a reserve for the water treatment plant. The model is showing in 3 years that we'll go from $19 million, where we currently are, down to $2 million. So that money will be spent in the near future as the water treatment plant is completed. So the carry forward fund balance is fund balance. It's money that wasn't spent,
right,
and that we're carrying forward into future years.
Right, yeah. It looked kind of like you were going to use $43 million of fund balance.
No, okay. Yeah, correct. And, I mean, so usually what you'll see in the final budget is another line item that will balance this out. So resources have to equal requirements. So in the requirement side, we'll add an unappropriated fund balance, so money that we're not expecting to use in the budget. So they'll match at $301 million. But for presentation purposes, I thought it was important to show the true budget and not what we expect to carry forward even in the future by any means.
Councilor
Steiner. Thanks, Mark. On the utilities increases, we are talking, are those strictly the pass-through increases? In other words, we're not planning necessarily fees on top of that?
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were talking about what they're charging us, we're going to have to collect.
Correct.
And then my second question was, when you were talking about the return of services going up 5%, could you talk a little bit more about that? With everything else being cut, I was wondering how internal services rose.
So it rose, well, it's twofold. So the first being, we had a fund, $1.7 million, that we used the one-time money for. We had to find a solution for that, $1.7 million. Costs of operations increase. Part of the proposal you'll see, we actually have reductions in simple service personnel. But even with that, the cost of the service and people will go up. And so it's the one-time money as well as the cost of the program.
Shane.
I have another question about the capital projects. I wasn't here on Monday, and I don't know if potentially talk about it then. But $57 million seems like a lot of activity. Is that really what you expect to happen in the next 2 years?
So we do. And, you know, we have probably the best public works director in the whole state of Oregon that really looked at the CIP. And we didn't want to give an unrealistic estimate of what we think can happen. This is what we really think is going to happen. And obviously things get pushed. Projects maybe don't need to be completed. But this is a closer number to what we do expect to be completed in the next 2 years.
David?
On the back to salaries and staff reductions, there were two positions eliminated during this fiscal year.
Correct.
And where were they?
Those are both in the information technology department.
And and what is the deal with the public safety support fee for the firefighters? Where does that show on the income?
So that's the next section. If we could, I wanted to try and break it into two distinct kind of sections. So that's what we'll get to.
So there's a new fee or an additional fee? I'll wait for it.
Yeah, if you don't mind waiting just a second.
Yes, Sean.
Mark, thank you for all the hard work on this. Quick questions. I see splattered through here amended budget. I wasn't, so 17-19 amended budget. I wasn't aware we amended the budget. And why would we not use the actual adopted budget as the body rather than an amended budget?
So we use the amended budget because those include the original budget plus any supplemental budgets.
So when was the budget amended?
There's been a handful of budget supplementals over the last
year. Oh, so that's supplemental?
Those are supplemental. Oh. So that's why we should be amended.
Okay, but we don't know what the adopted budget for 17-19 was. The original
budget. In this document, no.
Okay. Well, that's kind of problematic if we're looking at increases versus what the budget committee adopted previously. I mean, I'm not an accountant, but from a business perspective, if I was looking at this running a business, I'd be like, I defer to the accountant professor on the budget committee to address that, but it just seems a little bit kind of...
No, and we talked a little bit earlier today, but if you give me a couple minutes after the meeting or maybe tomorrow, we can pull up and open our original budget and our amended budget and show those changes real quick, and then we can work on how that's incorporated into the budget.
I'd just like to say that some of the supplemental budgets were to enable us to receive grants. So sometimes those are not an increase in cost to citizens.
Understood. I'm just saying as a rep, it's really hard to kind of understand we're comparing.
Fair point.
That's just kind of important. The other thing is we've talked about restricted and unrestricted monies, mm-hmm. and you and I have gone back and forth on this at $50 million. So I get the restricted money, which is $30 million, but roughly $20 million is unrestricted, which could go be used theoretically anywhere. So where does that show up in this?
So it's actually, if you're looking at the budget document, it is under long-term plan.
Oh, okay.
We have our estimated balance of June 30th of 19, which breaks down by fund. So, you mentioned the restricted part, which is in utilities. We can't use utility money for general purposes. That is restricted for those utilities. Customers were charged for the usage of a service. We can't take that on general fund or any other operation. The other main areas are in our, our health benefits reserve fund. We'll forecast about $880,000. Cemetery Trust Fund has $1 million. We can't touch that. That builds interest. We'll use a little bit in the proposed budget to maintain the cemetery. General funds at $4 million. We also have reserves in our equipment fund, so we're building, for future purchases. So those are the big items.
That's restricted, right?
Those are unrestricted.
Those are unrestricted.
Unrestricted, okay. Correct.
Don, did you have a question?
If we could go back to the capital projects. Sorry. There we go. So by the end of 2017-19, is it accurate to read these two columns? And essentially, a lot of the expenses that are seen in this 2019-21 budget are the ones that were accounted for in the 2017-19 budget but weren't expended. They were essentially put into the wrong time frame, is that correct?
Correct.
So when I read this, I know that $69 million was nowhere near the number that we spent. It was less than $10 million, right?
Correct.
So once we have this major construction biennium, we're expecting that number to kind of go back down into the sort of what we've seen up ahead of that in the previous two biennium.
I don't want to quote the public works director, but I think she said like $7 to $8 million is what we should expect once we get through the water treatment. And that $69 million, for example, $24 or $26 million of that is water treatment plant, and not even it's currently designed. So that's also in 1921 as well as 21 to 23. So some of that cost, once we normalize it, get through some of the large backup and projects, you'll start to see that down around $10 million, which you historically, which we've historically seen.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Councilor Jensen.
Thanks, Mark, for this. I've got a question about the internal service charges. It's done, and I don't expect you to go into it, but the methodology used to calculate those and essentially tax or receive reimbursements for your services. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's actually, I don't know how to share it. It's this super incredible Excel spreadsheet. If anyone wants to come in, I'd be happy to show you. So what it does is it breaks down, I'll use my department, administrative services, and more specifically finance. So in finance, we have different cost buckets or different operations, one being payroll. So we break down everyone in our department, how much impact they have on that cost unit, which is payroll. And then, so we come up with that number. We go from there and we say, how do we allocate that equitably? We use number of paychecks. So you take all the number of paychecks that payroll has issued, comes up with percentages, and then that's your contribution to the payroll function. And you see that across the board for all the other categories. Public Works has a little bit in central service for engineering and project management. Those are charged based on an estimate of how much time you're going to spend on projects. Public Works and central service is only about 5 to 10% impact in the general fund, and that's due to GIS. The rest is charged to utilities, but outside of Public Works, the rest are coming up with cost buckets and then coming up with how can you equitably charge that out. So payroll, number of paychecks, AP, the accounts payable, or, you know, when we're paying vendors, it's based on how many checks we cut. And then that's your charge and your contribution to central services.
So is that a industry-wide or professional-wide standard that you use?
It is. So the firm we used, SES Group, out of Bellevue, Washington, the state of Washington has an auditor, state auditor that's required to audit all cost allocation plans to ensure proper allocation. The one thing you can do with central service plans and cost allocation plans is you can manipulate them, and you can charge those people who have the ability to pay. And so the state auditor of Washington really, really cracked down on how cities are allocating those charges, because what he was finding up there was a lot of cities were charging utilities too much, because then they could raise rates. You're not charging your general fund, you're charging utilities, you're making money. And so SES Group is one of the leaders, at least in the state of Washington, in terms of a recognized plan that meets all the federal requirements.
One more quick question. So is the franchise fee that the enterprise funds pay essentially the same as internal service charges?
They're slightly different. So franchise fees are for your impact on the right-of-way, where central service is your impact on operations.
If I could just follow up on that. It helps me take the wacky world of government and anchor it in business terms. It's like overhead. It's how you would allocate overhead between departments. When you have the same problems, when you have multiple units. And so, basically, this is the overhead loading of what the departments in their fair share. It helps me to think in real terms.
Do we have other questions from the group on the message itself and the assumptions Mark's presented? Okay, Mark, thank you for those first two pieces. With that, we're going to move on to the third bullet under item three, which is you're going to the balancing?
Yeah, we call it the general fund balancing proposal.
Okay, sounds good. We are happy to listen, Mark.
So we all knew, and we've all known for the last 2 years at least that the general fund had a deficit. And I was directed by city council to not only, you know, reduce that deficit, but to eliminate that deficit. Because we needed to make sure that the city was on strong financial grounds, not just for 2 years, but for the long term. And just to mention, the balancing proposal as presented, and we have it in our long-range financial plan in the budget, is if it's adopted as is for the next 6 years, it does not look like we would need any changes. We could maintain our operations for 6 years.
Question?
Yes.
We could maintain our operations for that six-year period, making what assumptions about additional PERS assessment?
So it includes, the assumptions include PERS increases. We forecast healthcare increases. We are forecasting an improving tourism economy, as well as maintaining our property tax collections. But that does include no new positions over that 6 years and no new programs. That's the other assumption.
Mark, do you want to take questions as we go, or would you prefer to hold them to the end of this piece?
Let's go through this piece again, if that's okay, and then jump back, if that works.
Rich, are you okay to hold to the end?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. It's all you, Mark.
So, we all knew we had a working budget deficit. It's been widely commented in the news world that we had we started the biennium 1921 working budget. So I call it a working budget. It's a number that when we put in all our revenue forecasts, our personnel costs, and we asked departments for their requests, we came in as a general fund. And right now we're only talking general fund. We came in with a $2 million deficit, or a structural deficit in the general fund. And so I put up here, how did we get here? We got here for a couple reasons. The first being we had a deficit in the 17-19 budget of $1.25 million. We used ending fund balance, or the carry forward money, unspent money, in the general fund to balance the general fund, to maintain operations as is. We also had, as I mentioned, an $850 per year deficit in essential service. Those charges should have been contributed to the general fund. And we instead used one-time money from a reserve in the CIP or our facilities fund to maintain essential services. We also are seeing in this budget, we're seeing PERS in the general fund increasing $576,000 a year. We're also seeing the health care costs in the general fund increasing $400,000 per year. And that's a big number. And we said, you know, the general fund, we're forecasting ending the current fiscal year, the current biennium, at $4.1 million. So you can see that at a $2 million annual deficit, we could plug it with ending fund balance, but we have no reserve then at the end of this budget. And so the task was, how do we structurally balance this budget? And it includes, first off, we have to cut expenses. Our expenses and the trajectory that we were on wasn't sustainable, and we could see that, especially when we had decreasing revenue. So the first item we looked at was what revenue in the general fund is increasing, and we saw property tax. Well, under the old model, the model before this proposal, parks received $2.09 per $1,000 assessed valuation of our property tax of 4.22%, almost half. One of the major revenue source increases for the general fund, property tax, and half of that was going to parks. And working with the Parks and Rec Commission and their director, we recommended that, you know, could parks balance their budget if we held that contribution flat to where they are today and give them no increases. So in year one of the biennium, it's a $262,000 savings, about $280,000 savings in year two. Under this proposal, Parks is not receiving $209 for $1,000 assessed valuation. They're actually receiving $1.89. So $0.20 per $1,000 assessed valuation decrease in the city's contribution to the Parks and Rec Commission. We also look at our people. 65% of the general fund is people. And when you look at what departments did with materials and services that they control, and you see a decrease, you see flat decreases, there's no room there. And we said, you know, we're going to have to look at people. And unfortunately, the proposal in front of you eliminates 6 full-time positions, 2 in the police department, 1 in community development, 1 in administration, 1 in courts, and 1 in administrative services. These 2 proposals save $530,000 a year. We also looked at current trajectories in overtime in the fire department, and we saw increases, and budget committee has been concerned about that. Mr. Runkle, you mentioned several times about this increase, that it's not sustainable, we need to look at it. We did. And one of the things that we think, and it's going to have an impact on the community, and that's what's hard about this, is if we open up the staffing window, so currently the fire department has a maximum of 10 firefighters on duty at a time with a minimum of 9. If we open that window up to a maximum of 10 with a minimum of 8, and this does not mean that if they get down to 8 in the fire season that they have to stay at 8. This means they can continue to keep hiring at 10 or even more if they see the need. We see about $100,000 to $150,000 general fund savings in terms of overtime reductions. And this is a tough one because the fire chief got up before you about a month ago and showed that number 9 is a, I'll call it a magical number in the fire department. That number 9 allows them to respond to more calls that they can't do with 8. And so this is going to have a, could have an impact on our community in terms of the level of service that our fire department can maintain. But we think in terms of a reduction in overtime and allowing them the capabilities to staff up to 10 or above 10 during fire season, we're mitigating some of that risk to the community with a pretty decent savings in the general fund. So when we total the expenditure reductions, we're just under $900,000, so $892 is the total of those. And that brings our general fund working deficit down to $1.1 million after we cut those expenses. To mention, that is below the 1.25 that was adopted in the last budget. That doesn't get us to zero. And unfortunately, these cuts and elimination expenditures were the ones that we think are could happen and, you know, impact the residents the lowest possible that we could. So we said, we looked and said, you know, we don't want to raise any fees, taxes on the community. We want to live within our means as we've been directed to do. And so there's a few revenue enhancements included in the proposal. One being that we increase building fees. So we charge service, we charge customers for services that we provide. And the way you should charge for services is how much of that service does the public get a benefit from. When you look at building and the building department, the public does not get a huge benefit from them going out and inspecting your own private residence when you're doing a building project. And our cost recovery is down around 60-65%. So we're proposing that we increase the building fees, and that'll bring in just under $100,000. The impact would not be the general public, it would be the people coming in for those specific projects. We also are proposing that we utilize some of that health benefit reserve fund. We built the reserve to mitigate future rate increases. This is a future rate increase that we think is justified to use $100,000 a year to go into the general fund to help mitigate that those increases. We also are proposing in the last budget cycle, the city moved $100,000 from the general fund in local marijuana tax. We transferred it to the housing fund for a grant program. We're proposing that we do not do that transfer in the current biennial budget. It's $100,000 a year. That does not mean that we're recommending going away from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund and not funding those grant programs. We have some property, surplus property, that we're looking to sell in the near future. One being 380 Clay Street, which is a surplus property of the city that we're looking to sell. We think with that sale and possibly other sales that we will be able to maintain the Affordable Housing Trust Fund through different means. So we won't use the local marijuana tax, that will stay in the general fund. We'll fund the program through different mechanisms. We're also proposing that we increase the ash and forest resiliency fee from $1.39 to $3 for a single family resident. That $1.39 on the utility bill, which was set in 2015, has generated over $10 million to the community. in terms of grant money and really helped support AFR and all the good work in the watershed. That program is more expensive. We haven't changed it since 2015, so the proposal increases that to $3 to fund the cost of the Ashton Forest Resiliency Program. In revenue enhancement, we're at just under $500,000, which brings us down now to $660,000 deficit in the general fund. And, you know, I think the direction that I was given as the budget officer is don't come in with a structural deficit, come in at zero. Make sure new revenue equals new expenses. And so we didn't stop here. We didn't say, you know, $660,000, great, cut the deficit in half, that's a win. Let's celebrate it. We said, no, we need to make sure that the city is on a long-term, financially sustainable path. And one of the areas that we saw that led to that $1.25 million deficit in the last budget is the addition of 3 firefighters that were added mid-cycle about 2.5 years ago. Those firefighters with full burden, overtime, are just under $200,000 a year. So we were looking at how could we raise $600,000 to pay for those 3 firefighters? You know, we looked at the staffing window, and that's going to have a risk that we're going to implement, if implemented, that adds a risk to our community, and that's scary. If we eliminated 3 firefighters, we don't have the opportunities to increase staffing during fire season. We are at a maximum of 9. You know, the staffing window may be at 8 or 7, and as the fire chief demonstrated, that number 9 is really important in terms of our operations and fire safety. And so the proposed budget in front of you includes increasing the public safety support fee by $5. So it would raise from $1.50 to $6.50 to fund those 3 firefighters. When we get through that proposal, so with the expenditure reductions, $900,000, revenue enhancements of $500,000, I'm calling this offsetting revenue and expenses, of $600,000, we're left with a balanced budget, a budget that does not need any carry forward money and could long-term, or at least over the 6 years, assuming no new positions, no new programs, we have a sustainable budget in general fund for the next 6 years. We also wanted to talk about other options. So that proposal is presented, that's included in the proposed budget. But there is other options, and you know, one of the items that was eliminated from the proposal was 2 police officers. That was a decision that was really tough. The 2 officers are the school resource officer and one on shift. You know, the police chief over, you know, a year and a half demonstrated the need for those police officers. That the shift especially is not only public safety, not citizens and your interaction with police and making sure that you're safe, but it's also for our own employee safety. Under the model, if we reduce by these 2, we would have 1 shift that is under optimal, where we cannot respond at all times to 2 calls. We would have 3 people on duty at a time. We could respond to 1 incident. If there was another incident, we would be looking at mutual aid. And it's hard to put those police officers on the eliminated list in the proposed budget because we want to make sure our employees are safe, first and foremost, and we want to make sure that the service that they can provide to our citizens is there. So not included in the budget, but options that we want to explore as a budget committee is increasing the public safety support fee by an additional $2 to fund those officers. We also see the school resource officer as really important. You know, the earlier we can work with our kids and make them feel safe and talk to our police officers, the better. We have had discussions with the school district in terms of possibly partnering on that expense, so we want to continue those discussions in the next few months or years. We could also reduce or eliminate the Economic, Cultural, Tourism, and Sustainability, the ECTS program, the unrestricted funds of that. That's $150,000 a year, and that could fund one of those full-time positions, either fire or police officers. We could reduce or eliminate the social service grants, $164,000 a year. Once again, that adds up to one of those full-time positions. Some long-term options to maybe discuss and look at or keep on the table going forward is an increase to the food and beverage tax. Right now we're at 5% on prepared food and non-alcoholic beverages. We could increase that to 7%. and with that additional 2% being dedicated to the general fund, that brings in roughly $1.2 million a year. Not recommended in the budget, not included, is increasing our property tax to the maximum of 100, so that would generate $150,000 a year. Our water and wastewater franchise fees are slightly below electric. Electric's a 10, water and wastewater are 8. We could increase them both all to 10 and generate $300,000 a year. We could also implement a live entertainment ticket tax. We have the framework available that we'll present if you guys want to have a discussion on it. That could generate $200,000 to $300,000 a year. And another option is to meter Pioneer parking lot, which would net about $60,000. Another long-term option is to develop a plan to ask the voters for an operating levy. So the state of Oregon allows five-year operating levies to be voter approved. That would be an increase in the property tax. A 50-cent increase in our property tax would generate about $1.5 million. So we could develop a plan. The earliest that we would start collecting money, if the plan was developed and put on the ballot in November, would be next November, so November of 2020. The timing of the rolls and taxing for the county doesn't allow anything quicker than November of 2020. And this plan, which is not developed, needs to be, if that was a recommendation, we would have to develop what's included in that, what's not included. It could replace some or all of the utility fees. It would be one option, and it would provide a five-year sustainable budget. And then it would have to go back out for voter approval. A lot of information. That's the end of the general fund balancing program.
Okay, I know there's a lot there to digest, and I'm sure everybody's going to have quite a few questions, so I'm going to try to keep up. If I miss you, don't be afraid to speak up. Councilor Slaughter, please.
So would you just reset us for a second here? Would you take us back to where we have no revenue enhancements before all of this? And what this looks like at a place where you aren't increasing any fees, adding any taxes or anything like that. Is that it?
So that's it. So just reducing expenses, we're at $1.1 million negative.
And then going forward is when you start adding a variety of...
Well, in terms of the revenue enhancements, not so much. The building fees obviously would impact the building department. We're proposing to use the health benefit reserve fund, keeping the local marijuana tax, funding that program, and other things. Those aren't actually going to impact residents in terms of new fees or taxes. The AFR fee is obviously a utility bill increase. But the majority of the balancing proposal in revenue enhancements don't have an impact in terms of fees and taxes that the general resident is going to pay.
The majority
would not pay. For the building fees, health benefit fund, keeping the local marijuana tax. The AFR fee is billed to all residents. So roughly 300 of the proposed revenue enhancements would have no impact on the general public in terms of raising fees or any type of taxes. $202,000 would be the AFR fee.
Yeah, Sean.
Thank you. Mark, I kind of feel like if you go forward with the revenue enhancements, we're kind of slipping back into our old ways, and that's our addiction to spending. And I think, some of the stuff you've highlighted is, an additional this, an additional that. Granted, what Dennis said, Mr. Slattery just brought up, it may not be impactful for residents per se, but it will definitely be impactful if we have a builder who wants to develop a property, and it would be more cost prohibitive. So we have to stop thinking out of the box in the sense that if we can't attract innovative people with great ideas who want to live here, invest here, bring their kids to grow up here, we're doomed. So I would just, the hard work begins. I get it. But I would just like to state that for the record that, we have to kind of figure out a way to not increase fees, but find the balance through cutting spending.
Yes,
Rich.
Thank you, Paula. Mark, I attempted to disrupt your presentation earlier, and it was for this question. You mentioned early on that the budget that's proposed will continue operations as departmental operations, but really what we've seen is that there will be changes in the levels of service that we have now. Will the departments, particularly fire, that clearly have profound impacts, public safety, and what you just walked us through, have an opportunity to speak in more specificity than what you provided as to what the potential ramifications would be to the proposal?
Yes.
And that will be during, obviously during the process. And also on one of the proposed revenue streams the other night, we talked about the credit card fees, how the city is picking up the credit card fees. Could that be examined as a possible reduction in expenses to a certain extent? So, cost avoidance or?
Yes and no. So the credit card fees are mostly in our utilities department, which would be then reduction in the expenses and the cost of providing the service. So water, wastewater, electric, which are the biggest generators of revenue. So if we implemented a transaction fee, they would see a bigger benefit. The only fee right now in the general fund would be the electric utility user fee, the 25%. Tax there, as well as the AFR fee, so minor percentages of the total collected on the utility bill.
So it might help a little bit, but not to a great extent.
Correct.
But
it would help the utilities more than it would help general fund. And that's the real distinction, and maybe I didn't make it that clear, is, you know, general fund, when we look at the general fund, we're only looking really at three departments. We're looking at community development, police, and fire. And those are the three departments in the general fund. There's little fingers that touch the general fund, which is central services, which is your overhead. But we're really looking at police, fire, and community development in terms of the major expenses in the general fund.
Councilor Graham. I have realized that at the beginning of the meeting, when we were voting in the new chair, I forgot to disclose that I have a potential conflict of interest, so I thought I should do that now. My sister is an employee of the city of Ashland. She splits her time between the AFN and the fleet department. And I don't believe that that is going to influence my ability to make a decision based on facts here, but it's important for me to disclose that, and I will continue to do that at each of our meetings. My question is a follow-up to Councillor Rosenthal's question around those fees. I know that the credit card fees get distributed across the different departments, mostly in the enterprise funds, which we have that firewall in terms of moving our costs. But I also saw, in terms of a potential revenue enhancement in that last list that you gave us, was the potential of bringing water and wastewater up from 8% to 10%. And then I also see in electricity the potential of going up from $1.39 to $3. Would it be possible with those credit card fees to offset that so that those revenue enhancements did not essentially result in increased rates for those utilities? Is that a possibility?
That is a possibility. Let us bring it back to the analysis on that and how we can make that work.
Thanks. Yes, Jim.
Follow on to Councilor Slattery, isn't the $5 public service fee also on the utility bill? So there's two things that impact
it. It would be, yeah,
okay,
correct.
I just want to be clear on that.
Mayor Schroeder?
We have, I would like to understand more about the questions of the community center being deemed unsafe and the city hall being seismically unsafe. What has provision been made for dealing with those things in this budget?
A little bit in terms of city hall and a little bit in communities.
What's a little bit in terms of city hall?
Paul's come up.
Mayor, Council, Budget Committee members, congratulations. Glad to have you appointed both of you. So the minor piece that we're looking at was presented the other night in the capital improvements. So in the first 2 years, we'll look at that analysis. We do have some funding set aside for the community center. I think it's around $200,000 that we looked at for the community center, which I doubt will fully replace the roof, but we could do some shifting. We did not know what the impact was when we put that together originally. And then for the City Hall discussion, it's really going through that process of design. I do not feel that we'll be able to get resolution and resolve City Hall, but I do see us moving forward with Council's direction on where we're going with City Hall. So we put some funding in for final design and to keep us in the process of moving forward. We do show City Hall and there are funds, and it's a projection only. We do show funds in the out years for City Hall improvements.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, David.
While Paula's here, Public Works Service. This budget does show a substantial increase in CIP project spending or improvement spending. Has a kind of assessment has been made about how that's going to affect utility rates and other rates in the future? Because those are, most of that is in the enterprise. In the enterprise funds, so the program. Have you looked
at
that?
Question. So right now, we actually are looking at an update to the cost of service for water and wastewater. We should have those numbers back to all of you middle of May, end of May at the latest, to be able to show that long-term projection and make sure that the funding that we're looking at from spending and it's decreased from last year, we're actually going to spend this money. But I think, valid question, we saw that coming forward, so we are doing that analysis to make sure that our rates are correct, and then we bring that back to all of you and say, here's what we're looking at moving forward.
The budget figures we had showed the increase from, I guess, not this biennium, but the previous biennium, well, 11 million to 57, so that's a substantial increase in spending in a city that's not growing.
I'll let Mark answer that question, but I know we're looking at rates, we're looking at funds coming in, so our revenue projections as well as that spending.
Thank you.
A lot of that is the water treatment plant.
Yes, sir. The majority of what we're looking at in the next 3 years, so beyond this first biennium, is the water treatment plant.
Sean?
So, sorry, Paula. Another question before you skedaddle. So, this is all financing discussion. So, I guess my question to the Budget Committee is why isn't the Budget Committee involved in these discussions from the beginning to the end? I mean, I remember Mayor Stromberg wrote a letter back in 2007, and he cited that the long-term budget, all these projects should be presented and discussed by the Budget Committee. City Hall, we've talked about it. We appropriated $100,000, and then nothing else has ever been said to the Budget Committee about funding, sources, anything. So is that something that we should be discussing as a group? I mean, I think if we're talking about financing, it should be something the Budget Committee considers. So what do you think about that?
You know, and I think, Sean, just to answer a little bit on that is, we didn't utilize the Budget Committee properly in the off-season in years past. I think that was really the goal of the Budget Ad Hoc Process Committee is how do we utilize the Budget Committee in what we call the off-season. And I think the way we used it, the scheduled meetings was educational, keep up to date on quarterly financial reports, and informational. We see that changing. I think now we've got that process up to speed. We think going forward, those topics could be brought to the Budget Committee for discussion. It's good discussions to have, right? I think Council would welcome Budget Committee input into those decisions, right? I mean, we sit up here, there's 14 people. Everybody's going to have a different idea. We're not all going to agree
on anything, but the more discussion, the better decision we have, and it's something that the community wants, I think, and the community wants to support the decision of council with budget input.
I don't think anyone would protest that point of view at all. Certainly not me. I just think, you know, water under the bridge. What's passed is passed. So let's set the policy that engages the budget committee in a formal discussion on how we spend taxpayer funds. I think it's essential, and it's a long overdue. Thank you.
Yes, Councillor
Sauer. Yeah, I agree with you, Mr. Moran. And we're committed to doing that, and I think we've made some progress. I want to ask you a tough question that somebody's going eventually to ask you. If you would go back to how much we're short that, and if I understand correctly, one of the issues or one of the cures for this is the idea of an operational levy. So my question is sort of twofold. Hopefully not awkwardly stated. What's the potential of further cuts? Where would they come? Just to throw a number out there, if you bring the cuts that are needed to whatever makes that balance, so that we don't have any new enhancements whatsoever. And then that's what you would put in an operational levy, if I understand things correctly. So we could potentially even shrink city government another step down from there. I don't like that question, but I mean, if we're looking at, I keep using the term, a square peg in a round hole. We have to find somewhere to make this government fit inside its round hole. And we're not there yet without increasing costs to the average citizen. Or less than average citizen.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the $900,000 that is proposed to be eliminated, you get down to $1.1 million. The impacts to the community on the cuts are pretty huge. The impacts to the organization are huge, right? You're looking at reducing community development staff, which, you know, was mentioned, is already slow, right? Now you're reducing it by one staff member. How much more can they actually get cut before they can even function? But you know, I mean, I think you're looking at drastic changes.
Right.
In terms of how do you get down another $1 million from the 900 that we've already recommended?
My question is, when you're doing the levy, wouldn't you then make the case? Wouldn't you then have to make the case for that funding level in the levy? And so, couldn't our direction here be meeting that number? It is going to be drastic cuts in services, and I know. It's not a great conversation. And I know we're talking about people who've been involved with this for the past 2 years trying to figure things out. But I'm just trying to figure out how we give the community, because really what you're talking about with the levy is you're talking about giving the community the question of how much service do you want, rather than us deciding on one fee after another fee after another fee, and then cut by death by 1,000 cuts. I'm just wondering if you think that's feasible, or is that just
if you're asking if I could go back to the drawing table and come up with $1.1 million in additional cuts, the answer is no. You know, the cuts that are already proposed are probably the most unpopular thing I've ever proposed. Every department head, I think, hates me right now, and that's fine because we have a mission and we have to make sure that long-term the city's on a financial, well-grounded space. But when you're looking at additional $1.1 million on top of the cuts we've already made, you're looking at things of maybe just eliminating the fire department entirely and outsourcing it to District 5. You're looking at that drastic of changes. You know, you still have to maintain police operations. You could maybe, you know, ask the sheriff if they want to take it on. and instead of having a police force. I think that those are the levels of cuts that if we had come up with $1.1 million that we would be looking at. In terms of public safety, we have no more additional cuts that we could make in order, you know, that could keep our citizens safe, as well as keeping our employees safe.
I think you saying that is important. One of the questions I've always had on the budget committee is, can Ashland afford Ashland? We all like what we've got here. At some point or another, we have to make these tough decisions. So when you say that you think this is as much cut as you can get, I think that's an important statement. And I just wanted to hear you voice that. Thanks.
Well, there's an alternative. There is an alternative that is not been discussed. That has to do with salary levels. And sometimes in a difficult budgeting situation, you have to ask employees, is it more worthwhile for me to continue to work, maybe at a reduced salary? That's an area that is, you know, we haven't discussed, and I don't think but it is. I just want to mention that it is as an alternative that employees may choose to keep the same staffing levels, but a reduced compensation. That it's not a popular thing, but cutting staff is also not popular. And when you look at an operation the size of the city of Ashland facing constraints, I think you have to be willing to have that discussion.
You know, and I just want to touch on that because we did have that discussion. And when we look at the general fund, non-union employees. So these are collective bargaining agreements. They don't have to open up those agreements if we ask them to, I don't think, to take pay cuts. And non-represented, which you could do something like that. Every 1%, so there's 18.5 employees in the general fund that are non-represented, each 1% would be $18,000. So if you're saying, you know, you want to fund the rest with 10% across the board non-represented employee cuts, I mean, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at a 10% reduction in all non-represented employees.
Mark, I'm going to jump in here if I can. The two things that you brought up as far as the substantive cuts and how much they would impact. You mentioned fire, you mentioned police, and you've trained us all very well to understand what the general fund pays for. But for those who are listening, the reason you mentioned fire, the reason you mentioned our police force is because general fund is what pays for those services. The reason why we're not going to other essential services our city provides is because those do not come out of the general fund, and it is the general fund that is in question here. Is that understanding correct?
That's exactly correct.
Okay, because I just want to make sure that everybody listening understands that it isn't something with regard to our public safety. It's just there are so many things that make use of the general fund, so the options are limited. Yes?
Exactly. Correct.
Great. Now, I know there are more questions, so who do I have?
I have one more.
Yes, please.
So my concern is more PERS, but that's a later discussion. What I would like to know is if you cut a position, what service does that cut? I mean, you've explained it in police and fire. You haven't explained it in ComDev and the FN and some of the others. Could you tell me what that's going to mean to the average person? Is that something we could talk about, whether it's worth that much money or not?
In terms of the six cuts that we have listed, I prefer to stay away from that discussion. You know, these are actual people that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, we're not looking at six positions on a piece of paper. These are people's lives.
Yeah.
And to talk about why we recommend those publicly is not something I prefer to do. If you want me to, I can. But in terms of the service that internal people are going to get lose, it's huge, especially in my department. The position that's proposed to be eliminated is something that, you know, it's going to be hard to replace if we ever could replace it. I don't think we can. Courts, it looks like a reduction in hours. And in administration, Administration is our communications analyst, and I think everybody in the community would say that's one of those areas that we need to improve upon. I think it's a goal of the city council, it's a goal of the community, that we need to improve our communication. So that's something that, you know, in this proposed budget is eliminated, and that's going to have a huge impact, both internally, in terms of our operations, because those functions are going to get shifted to other people in the organization. And we don't have an expert on staff to handle that. So you're not going to see as good of communication as if we would have kept that position.
Well, that was pretty much the type of answer. I wasn't expecting, you know, that personal detail. Is your hand up?
Yes, Mayor Stromberg.
I want to put out at least conceptually three other possible strategies that we can do. So I'm just going to say them roughly now, but maybe we can be thinking about them and discussing them. Maybe I'll just put out two right now. One is that AFM has a low market penetration, and it generates some operating, revenue of about, what, $300,000 or $400,000 a year. Market penetration, I'm just pulling the figures out of the air, maybe 38%. It's now, as I understand it, offering competitive services at competitive prices. So we have citizens here who, if they were simply to change from some commercial internet provider to AFM, their costs wouldn't change, their service wouldn't change, but we could pick up, if we went from 38% to say 70%, we might be able to generate a couple of $100,000 revenue stream doing that. So that's one idea.
Yeah, just to touch on that one, it's unfortunate we didn't get to Donald Keeley, our AFN operations manager, on Monday, but that's one of the things he's looking at is how do you increase that penetration locally? I'm a resident of Ashland. I got this flyer. I hope everyone else got that flyer. I think that's awesome that we're now marketing it. This is your local option. You know, AFN is giving you that local option to buy service from your own community. And we have a lot of advantages that Charter does not have, or shouldn't say Charter, our competitors have. You know, we are that local provider. We have an increase. We're way better customer service than you're going to get anywhere else. And that marketing plan that is now being implemented out of AFN, I think, is incredible. And I wish Donald could have showed you, you know, the impact that we are seeing locally in terms of increasing customer base, not only with AFN, but all our local ISPs. And one of the things is if AFN, which is now starting to make money, pay their debt obligation that they're required to pay, we could actually put a franchise fee in place to capture some of that you see up here. AFN does not have a franchise fee. So that is a realistic option.
I have one other very conceptual idea, and that is the city has, I'll say this very abstractly, it has lots of tangible assets. And we haven't taken a look, there are two parts to this, we haven't taken a look at the market value of those assets versus what we're getting for them in terms of their impact on services. And I don't believe in using one-time money to deal with problems in cost streams. But we have two major debts, the wastewater treatment plant and the AFN. And if we were able to translate some of our underperforming assets, speaking very loosely, into enough money to retire one or the other of those debts. I think the debt service on AFN is about $1 million a year. And the debt service on the sewage plant is
$1.6 million.
Yeah, $1.6 million. So if you could pay off the principal on either of those, you could make a major reduction in cost streams, which is big.
Correct.
That's something
you know, the city administrator is committed to doing an asset management plan, so look at all our assets, see how they're performing, and make the evaluation and have the board on all of them.
Yes, Sean.
One last comment. Follow Councilman Slattery's questioning. In regards to outsourcing, a lot of innovative communities are looking at it. We had a brief discussion around Mercy Flights when Fire Department Chief presented. I don't think we should poo-poo it. I think we should consider everything to be on the table, and I think we should really look maybe at a cost benefit analysis. I mean, you kind of presented it black and white, and I don't think it is black and white. I firmly believe that there's always a road to yes. It's how many sacrifices and how hard you want to work to get there. That's been my experience. So I think we should have an open discussion around it. I'm not supporting it. I don't know either way. But if we're talking seriously about how do we attack the cost side of the equation, I think that's a realistic variable that we have to consider.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately I didn't put it in my slide, but in the budget book you'll see when we talk about fire and staffing levels, we've included money to do an evaluation of the ambulance service. You know, come in with someone, not internal staff, someone who's an expert in this, come and evaluate our ambulance service, what is the true cost, what's the true impact if we were to eliminate our ambulance service and contract Mercy Flight, and really have a good analysis done, not one that we're just making, you know, in the budget committee process, but something that an expert is coming in and giving recommendations, because it comes down to costs. Obviously, that's one factor, but it's also a level of service and the impact that has on the community that needs to be evaluated.
Well, I would agree, but I'm not advocating for hiring an outside consultant to do this. I think we have the best outside consulting right there with Kelly Manning, who worked in Medford and was involved in that whole concept. So, you know, I'd like to engage her in that discussion with the budget committee and see, you know, the pros and cons and portions of, you know, a service rather than A to Z. There's a way to kind of evaluate the different services and price up those out accordingly, and that's what I'm suggesting we look at.
Yeah, Steve.
I want to give a little pushback to you, Sean. I don't think anybody here is poo-pooing the idea. The fire chief is very open to examining some consolidations and some different ways of doing things.
Bad choice of words on my part, sorry.
Mark, I actually have one quick question, if I may. As you outlined the various revenue enhancements and the offsetting revenue, you did well to say what we get for what we would potentially be paying. Mm-hmm. On the AFR increase of $1.60 to the $3, what is that in essence supporting?
That's supporting the overall AFR program. It's not only supporting the division chief that's in AFR and the great work that he's doing there. It's supporting grants applications, so going after grants, trying to bring in more money. So it supports the whole operation, so any type of grant coordination. There's some CERT money in there, community emergency response team, that it would support as well.
So said another way, if that fee were not increased, we may have to let go of CERT and we would not be able to pursue grant funding in support of AFR.
Probably not as well as we currently are, correct?
Understood. Yes?
On that note, one of the things that's happened with AFR is because of their vigorous activity and pursuit of these grants, We've really gained a national recognition, and it's kind of like a snowball now. And so it's one of those deals where we're in place, we have a wonderful reputation, and it's going to become easier. And it's a flower that we shouldn't let wilt away. We should water.
Any further questions on this specific piece of the presentation?
No. I don't have a question, I have a comment.
thanks, Mark, for going through all this and doing this. And I would disagree that we're addicted to spending. Having set up at the front table for 8 years and having lived here for in the decades, I do think one of the things we're addicted to is providing services. And everyone demands different things. That's why we have what we have. That's why we're not Kay Falls, Roseburg, Grants Pass, Phoenix, Talent, Metro, or whatever. And I think we need to keep that in mind. It isn't always just about the bottom line. I think it's the services we like to see and what we demand from everyone that works for the city and that. And I think that's the balance. It's not how cheap can we get. It's basically, are we getting value for what we want? And I think that's what we have to keep in mind. Thanks.
Mark, in light of the exploratory options that you've outlined and the core list that you brought forward, what is your plan of action with regard to this committee tackling those options and making definitive decisions regarding them?
So the plan going forward, and you know, we released the budget tonight. I think you guys can see why we wanted to have this discussion before we just released it and didn't have a discussion, an open discussion about what's included in there. So we purposely waited to release the budget as along with this proposal. Seeing that, I think it's going to take time for everyone to digest what we are proposing, what's included in the budget. So we're proposing that next meeting we would go into enterprise funds, the public works, and look at those. And then the preceding meeting get into more discussions on the general fund and how, you know, what we like about the proposal, if we want changes in there, if these funding options are legitimate, how much more information we bring back, how much more discussion we have. So that would be May 1st meeting.
And with the 2 weeks lead time, questions that the committee may generate with regard to that all-important discussion, would you like those sent directly to you, to Kelly? How would you like to receive that?
I mean, directly to me is fine. I mean, I'll communicate with Kelly on that information.
Thank you. So with that, if there are no further questions on this side, oh, yes, Shane, go ahead.
Somewhat. On the expense side, I noticed that contractual services is quite a lot. I don't know if it's called out separately on this.
So citywide contractual services down 12%, so 23 million down to 20 million.
Sure. Contractual services is like 16 million just a couple biennia ago. Like, how did it jump up to 20 million?
I struggle, and I'm going to be completely honest. I struggle with the biennium view of things because when we look at it, it's not recent past. So that number is 13, 15. So we're talking during the Great Recession time frame, right? So obviously things are cheaper. We didn't do as much as a city. That's a long time ago, really. And so you can see today it's actually down from the last budget from 2 years ago. But, I mean, the city has contractual services. That line item includes our contribution to ECSO as well.
Would it help you with the biennial?
And I should also mention, can I mention one more on that contractual services? That's also the line item that includes the parks contribution. So the contribution the general fund makes to parks is the contractual services, which falls under that line item as well. So as their revenue went up with property tax increases, you would expect that contractual service line item to go up as well.
Sure. Wait, say that sentence again. If their revenue went up.
So when we look back at 13-15, property taxes, the total city collections have increased. Parks' portion of that has increased as well because the formula of $2.09 per $1,000 has been there since 2013. So they've seen their increases in contractual service, their contribution from the general fund.
I'm sorry, I don't really agree that there was an agreement on the 209 back in 2011. So just I don't want to just listen.
But that's what the agreement's for.
Yeah.
Uses the equation.
So that's what they were doing.
This is for another subject. I just wanted to not let it fly.
Okay. So we're still on bullet number three, but the fourth item in that section. We're going to look at the layout and format of the new budget book.
Yeah, so just wanted to touch on the new budget book layout. We actually kind of excited. This actually kind of makes me excited. So we have actually two budget books. We have this budget book, which is before you, and it's also on our city website. If you go to our city website under the budget process, it is live. The community can get out there. They can get that today. We also have a hard copy that we provided to you all today. We changed, I said when I interviewed for the job 2.5 years ago, they asked me what research did I do on the city, and I said, I read the budget, but it wasn't very good. And that was the truth, is we had a lot of information in that budget book, but there was no information. And so one of the missions that we set out, City Council directed me to look at the budget book and make it a document that's usable. You know, we don't need to waste staff time, the community time on a budget book that doesn't tell you anything, doesn't provide any level of information. And so we redesigned, completely redesigned the budget book. We didn't even look at the old one. We said, let's do something new. And so what you have before you is a new budget book, an entirely new budget book. It changes the focus. The focus is not at the department level. The focus is at the fund level. The fund level discussion is where actually all the information is held, and it's, in my opinion, the most important part of any budget document. The city provides a wide range of operations, from public safety and community development in the general fund to our water department, and combining them into department discussion is very confusing, and so we changed that. We focus on the funds. We added a lot more narrative to describe, why are we forecasting what we're forecasting? What are the changes? We want to provide that information to the community in a way that everybody can understand. We've also expanded our charts. Former budget committee member Garrett Carucci wanted expanded charts, and we listened. He showed me some examples of some past cities I worked with, and, we showed more information. And so we said, we're going to do that again. So we're not showing you just personnel services. We're going to break that out. We're going to show you the impact in the departments of regular employees, their overtime impact, across the board. So we've expanded the charts. We provided more information. We think we provided it in an easier-to-read format. Hopefully, it's more productive than what we had before. We also changed the focus in the department sections away from divisions. So in the past budget book, it was very confusing to figure out what was going on in the department. So you looked at the fire department, they're broken down into, at that time, operations, EMS, and wildland, or wildfire. People don't get that. They look at it as the fire department. And what our mission was is, how do you create a budget book that 95% of the readers can actually understand? And that's what we're trying to provide today. And I think we accomplished that. Hopefully we did. But we also want to provide that level of information for that 5% of the readers who want more. So we're really excited about the new budget book. We hope it's working for everybody. And if there's any criticism, it's a living document. If this is a proposed budget book, if there's information that you think's missing, if there's charts you want expanded, if there's different charts you want, let us know. We'll increase. We'll put it in, and we'll give you that new document. It's a living document, which is great. The part I'm actually even more excited about it, I mentioned we're providing two different budget books, or two different budget layouts. I have a hard time by any of view of things. I try to do a yearly view. Right now we have a biennium budget. What that means is we have 2 1-year budgets and we have a 2-year appropriation level. I have a hard time personally looking at that 2-year slice of data and coming up with any type of analytical analysis around it. So I look at everything on a yearly basis. I know everybody's comfortable with biennium view of things, so we have the printed book in that format. But we also created an online version of this book that is that looks at it as a yearly view. And what's really exciting is this online version is actually the first in government finance that is 100% integrated into our budget module. And it is also the first 100% interactive budget book.
And I think, I'm going to try and show you this because I think it's really awesome. If you go into our OpenGov site, which is ashenlr.opengov.com, and you go into stories, it's live right now. You can go into the VN 2019-21 budget. When you click in there, it's going to give you a table of contents. So you can real quickly look at whatever section of the budget you want to look at. I'm just going to pick one down here for wastewater fund. It's going to give you that same narrative format. It's all online. Anyone can access it 24 hours a day. But what's cool about this, and this is why it's integrated and interactive, is you can hover over this stuff, these charts, and get the information. So everything that's in the budget book now is at your fingertips, and you can look at it however you want. And this is what's even more exciting is, you know, we said we want to create a budget book that 95% of the public can understand, but we want to give access for more information. There's times that 95% wants more information. There's 5% of the public that wants a lot more information. What you can do from these charts is you can come in here and say, charges for services, I want to get more information on that. From one simple click, you're going to open up into our OpenGov transparency site, where you're going to get all the information you want. You can come down, not only see it graphically, but it's going to give you the table view. From here, you can also open up the charts. So you can see a breakdown of charges for services by every single category. Really excited to introduce this. It's a work in progress. I think this is the future of government finance. I think in 5 to 10 years, you're going to see that every city across the country is doing an online version of a budget book. You know, they might not get there where it's going to be 100% integrated, 100% interactive, but there will be an online budget book presented. I was hoping to show you another feature is one of the areas and one of the information requests that we had in the last budget cycle was what is the cost of your people? And we traditionally had a format that we provided that is not very easy to read. And I think everybody knows, I believe in being an open book. Everything I see, I think you guys should see. And so we created an online position report for all positions in our budget. From this site down here where it says wastewater budget, there's 12.3. By clicking on that, you're going to open up again into our transparency site, and you're going to get a breakdown of every single employee by position name, their total pay, the total benefits, and total compensation for the year. Once again, this is, you can access it through ashenlr.opengov.com through the story, which is in the budget book, or if you just come to our main transparency site, we've created those stories, the reports for you. So if you don't want to look at the budget book, you just want to look at the numbers, you can come in here. You can get the budget in the biennium view. So looking at it in the 2 years chunks is here. You can also get it how I like to look at the budget, which is in the yearly view, which is also now public for the public to look at. And the chart right below that is our position report. And it provides a list of every single position that the city has in the budget. Broken down, total pay, total compensation, and the benefit piece. So, like I said, it's a living document. We're excited for the change. We think it's providing more information. We hope it's more user-friendly. We know this is going to be a very, very tough budget season. There's a lot of tough decisions, and the better we can communicate and provide information in a way that everyone understands, I think it's better for not only us as a budget committee and staff, but also the community.
Thank you, Mark. I know as part of the ad hoc process, you received a lot of feedback on the book. So I know a lot of time and effort has gone into that, and it is greatly appreciated. Thoughts, comments, feedback, or questions with regard to the new layout? Yes, David.
Well, I think this is terrific that you provide that kind of information. I figure you appreciate you going to a fund program. I think that fits in with the and when we went through state training on budgets, it was all funds. It was all, we were talking about funds directly, right? And now we're going to make it much more understandable. On the bigger detail, and here I am talking about OT again, but that talks about regular salary positions. It doesn't include OT.
So you can break down through any of these reports. You can break down overtime.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of a couple clicks. So if I'm in the 2-year view of things, I can come down to the filters in, on our OpenGov site, and I can say expenses, and I want to see expense type. Well, let me show you the easier way. You just click on this picture. So I want to see personnel services. Boom, I got it. Salary and wages, and then benefits. Now I'm going into salary and wages. Come down to the line item that says overtime. I click on that, and you can see our citywide overtime. If you don't want to see it in this view, you come over to the filters, which are on the left side. And instead of broken down by expense, you say, no, I want to see it by departments. And now you're going to get a breakdown of our overtime by departments in a matter of two clicks. I mean, super powerful stuff. The other thing I should mention is through the online portal, you can actually increase the information that you can provide. One of the pages that's linked, and I don't know where exactly where it's linked, we actually have an overtime discussion. So, you know, in the budget book, you're not going to have an overtime discussion, but in an online format where we can create pages, you know, in the matter of minutes, we can have any discussion we want. So there's a link in, I believe it's in the budget message. I might be wrong. It might be in the general fund balancing proposal. It's links to another discussion strictly on overtime. So if there's information you want, anyone, this data is real. I mean, we're looking into a database. That's why I say it's fully integrated. We're not looking in Excel spreadsheets. We're not downloading from our system into Excel. We're in a database. We can pull whatever information you want quickly. I mean, in a matter of seconds, whereas in the past, it took a little bit longer. So any information you want, let us know. We'll create a story. We'll create it. We can actually download this into PDF. So we can have a story out. We can also bring a PDF and give it to you guys as well.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. One of the issues that I see is one that's harder really to pull forward, which is the time that, for example, staff is involved with commissions mm-hmm. and the function of how we do our government. Looking at what people are involved with added value services, the cost of, in terms of personnel time, of things like the social service grant programs. I know that there are a lot of things that we do that are very popular with the people in our city. My concern about that is that some of these things are not basic services that a city normally provides. Ashland has chosen to provide a lot of these services, and that has made it more expensive. It's not popular to say that, I know, but it is important to realize that there's probably over a person, two people that just are involved with their time on commissions.
That's a good point. And you know, I just put down a note. We'll try to get a breakdown on staff time estimates on the spending on commissions.
So we are coming into the end of the agenda. Two quick things before we go for a motion to adjourn. First, Mr. Lohman has taught us all well, but a friendly reminder that the budget process is now officially commenced, so we are not, as CDC members, to discuss or deliberate the budget outside of public meetings. I think that's just important for us all to keep in mind, and I believe if you go through the legal framework document that's passed out, it's outlined in there as well. Second, I would like to kick it over to our city administrator for any housekeeping details before we adjourn.
Thank you, Chair. I handed out two documents for you. One is entitled Legal Framework. That came from the committee, the Budget Process Ad Hoc Committee, put this together. I think this is really good information in terms of what a budget committee is, what its function is, and kind of sets some ground rules, if you will. But I think you all agreed to some of those ground rules at the last budget time. And the second thing is that I believe that all of the appointed members of the Budget Committee know, but if you don't, the Council did a goal setting and set goals and priorities. And you'll notice the first page is three goals that are, in one sense, kind of how we will function and a work program. So For example, Sean, you talked about doing some deep drilling of some departments in terms of cost recovery or pros and cons of providing those services in terms of dollars spent. And you'll notice that in many ways the council has encapsulated those things as work program items. So very rigorous work program for the next 2 years to do these things. On the second page of that document is the council's goals and actually their priorities. They set essential services as their number one priority, and then they looked at value services. So those essential services, as you can see, are sort of the main services that we provide, from the electrical system to public safety to community development, so utilities and infrastructure. That also includes all the support for those. So, for example, Mark's department supports these essential service functions. And this also includes all the infrastructure associated with these departments. So, for example, street repair and maintenance includes all of our streets. The council also prioritized value services. And as you can see what those are. I do want to let you know that when Mark was putting together the proposal for the cuts that were brought forward to you and the options of moving money from one area to another to alleviate some of this budget shortfall that we have, that was based on these council goals. You'll notice that, and I'll give you an example, money was proposed to be moved from marijuana tax money from affordable housing into the general fund where those essential services are provided. And so there was a method to the proposal, and I just want to let you all know what that was. Finally, I want to thank Mark for an enthusiastic, open process and document. This is not being done elsewhere in the state, and I think this is where we should all be headed in government, frankly, with this kind of transparency. But I want to thank him for spearheading this. I want to thank his staff who helped him with this, and then I want to thank all the department heads who provided endless hours of work to funnel the information to Mark to get the budget produced. And like Mark said, most of us, in fact, I don't know, maybe all of us who work for the city of Ashland do so because we believe in providing a service. And we believe in providing exemplary service. And this budget was difficult to put together because it deals with those services in a way that we're kind of not used to. And so I want to thank him because to put this forward is really a courageous act. And not many budget directors will come forward without Kevlar with a budget that proposes cuts. And so I want to thank him for his courage and smarts and enthusiasm and openness. Because without that, this would have looked much different, I think.
Thank you, Mark, most definitely. Before we have a motion to adjourn, the next meeting will be next Wednesday, April 24th, 6 p.m., also here in the council chambers. And if there are no other, do we have a motion to adjourn? Second?
Second.
Thank you all for coming tonight. Thanks, adjourn.